You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on
a
CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
Oh, no. I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 250th edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. 5 years ago, Tech Talk Radio started on 3WBC, before there was streaming, and just about the same time that podcasts were becoming fashionable. There was no such thing as ADSL2. The Minister for Communications was Helen Coonan, the Treasurer was Peter Costello, and the Prime Minister was that short little guy. Now, we're heard on several radio stations around Australia and New Zealand, stream live every Monday night at 8pm, and we're in the ears of podcasters globally. So, thanks for sticking around if you've been with us over the years, and welcome back if you're just new to the show. Tech Talk Radio consists of a group of regular panellists who are well-versed in the tech way in their own fields of expertise. Adam Turner joins us on the couch every week for his view on technology, and Adam was formerly Melbourne Deputy Editor of Next, the business IT section of Fairfax's The Age and Sydney Morning Herald newspapers, and is also a well-respected freelance IT journalist and Apple enthusiast. Lydia Davis is an expat living in Silicon Valley, California, and joins us from time to time as news breaks from the epicenter of modern technology. We have regular guests from all facets of the tech world, not to forget interviews with today's movers and shakers. So as we head down the track beyond our 250th episode, stick with us as Tech Talk Radio continues to demystify technology and the politics thereof in the way we know how.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
The war continues. Nintendo cuts price of the Wii Games console. Emo Labs wins Demo God Gong for invisible speakers. AFACT raises concerns over unlimited ISP plans. And USB 3 is scheduled for the end of 2009. In just a few moments, we're going to wrap up the past few years. But first, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the Configure Computer Virus baffles experts. Telstra set to deploy the National Warning System. Google hits back at Microsoft Frame Slur. And the ACMA helps teachers fight cyberbullying. Welcome to Tech Talk News. But first this week, a legal standoff between film and internet industry groups. The Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft, led by Roadshow Films, has alleged that the Internet Industry Association sought to model itself as a disinterested party, advising the federal court in deciding whether iiNet aided illicit downloads of copyright material. Court documents show that the Internet Industry Association believed it had a unique perspective on the litigation because it helped to draft safe harbour laws. The association said it had special knowledge and expertise from its experience in writing policy. The Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft began the case late last year, alleging iiNet did not do enough to prevent its broadband subscribers from illegally sharing copyright-protected works. The ISP argued that it did not have the legal right to intercept the communications of its subscribers, a law which is now being amended. At the last directions hearing before Justice Dennis Cowdroy on the 8th of September, Clayton Utz's Mr. Stephen Finch, acting for the ISP group, said it would make an application on behalf of its 140 members, which included iiNet, to offer its services as a friend of the court. Justice Cowdroy said at the last directions hearing that he was not yet sure what purpose would be served by the ISP group's application, but he did not rule out its involvement. Almost a year after it was first detected, the so-called Configure computer virus is still baffling security experts. The Configure worm is just short of its first birthday, and the best minds that Silicon Valley and antivirus companies have to offer have still failed to crack the code. They say from a cybercrime point of view, it's the largest threat, and they admit that they are no closer to finding a cure or indeed who is behind it. Although computers with the latest patches and antivirus software should be safe, The director of the Configure Working Group, Mr. Rodney Joff, says it's rare for people to have all the protection they require.
While we'd been hoping all the way along that this was perhaps an experiment that had got out of hand, it's now clear to us that, in fact, it's a whole lot more than that. It is malicious software. Unfortunately, we won the early skirmishes, but losing the current battles. What we've done is we've managed to stifle control of Configure, the early versions of Configure. What is evident is that the people behind us are as smart as we are, if not smarter.
Microsoft is offering a $300,000 reward for anyone who can help solve the Configure crisis. Telstra will build the infrastructure for a new national telephony-based warning system that will alert Australians in the event of a life-threatening emergency. Victoria Police and Emergency Services Minister Bob Cameron said that after a rigorous tender process where Telstra was chosen over rival Optus, the Victorian phase of the system would be completed by the end of October. This is intended to allow for the system to be ready in time for the next bushfire season. The need for an alert system was highlighted earlier this year when a series of bushfires ignited across Victoria in February, resulting in 170 deaths, Australia's highest ever loss of life from a bushfire. After the bushfires occurred, the government was heavily criticised for not having a warning system in place. The minister explained that the system would alert communities to emergencies by sending a recorded voice message to landline telephones and also an SMS text message to mobiles based on subscribers' billing addresses. The Victorian government said it aimed to develop an additional capability to deliver mobile phone messages based on the physical location of a handset at the time of an emergency. It also wants to be able to use the technology to track mobile phones. Google has hit back after Microsoft suggested its Chrome Frame plugin would render Internet Explorer 8 less secure. In a statement, Google not only rubbished Microsoft's comments, but also ridiculed the Redmond giant's web browsers for being out of date and unstable. Google said that Chrome Frame is still an early version, but is designed to tackle both speed and security issues inherent in out-of-date and non-standards compliant browsers like Internet Explorer. The statement said, while we encourage users to use a more modern and standards compliant browser such as Firefox, Safari, Opera or Google Chrome rather than a plugin, for those who don't, Google Chrome Frame is designed to provide a better performance, strong security features and more choice to both developers and users across all versions of Internet Explorer. And the Communications and Media Authority last week launched Let's Fight It Together, a teaching resource to combat cyberbullying. Let's Fight It Together is a resource which includes a 7-minute film depicting the story of a teenager who becomes the target of bullying via the internet and mobile telephone. The Minister for Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy, Senator Stephen Conroy, said educational resources such as Let's Fight It Together are a key part of the government's approach to cyber safety. Senator Conroy said in a statement that new technologies offer a world of opportunity, but it is important that young people are empowered to address issues such as bullying in the online environment. I'm a croaky Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this 250th episode of Tech Talk Radio.
Well, good evening and welcome to the very first edition of Tech Talk Radio. My name's Andrew McCollum, and I'm your host for this show. And this show is all about technology. It's all about the technology that you use at home and how you use it and how we can make it better. The aim of this show is to educate and entertain. We're going to have all sorts of topics from computers and computer help, the internet, telecommunications, video, DVD, and home theatre.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb.
I like a fresh install, me personally, but nonetheless.
Many a night have I spent around a campfire biting the heads off teddy bears.
Okay, good. Glad I asked that. Now,
I'm wondering if that's holographic.
I must admit, I'm still a little disappointed.
Some woman sitting there 2 inches from the camera lens saying, no, you're wrong.
But there's things on there. I'm going, what on earth would I want to use that for?
I've never gone down that path.
Foxtel, debut HD.
How's that for rumour and scuttlebutt?
You spend your $2 and buy yourself a cafe, you drop your payload and off you go.
Yes, it
was. So what's to say that I'm not who I say I am?
If you reckon this is good or bad, there's a bit of a fracas.
Dr. Ron.
Oh, I'm excited.
I'm easily amused.
I might be a bit of a strange anomaly.
There's a level of ignorance out there which isn't acceptable.
Why do
afraid you send Andrew McCollum an email.
But me with my fat thumbs.
If in doubt, blame it on the Russian mafia.
It's very, very popular. Lego Darth Vader's trying to order stuff in canteens and things.
Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Mark Diggins.
One fibre, you send it both directions. We tried the other one, go, why won't this push in? I read the article and still couldn't quite picture what they were trying to do. It sounds like they've got two heads at right angles to each other.
Graham Callaghan.
Good evening, everybody.
Do not switch off your brain.
They're talking about blocking illegal sites, but who decides what's illegal?
What's the point of having a really fast connection if you're going to use your monthly allowance in 5 minutes?
Apparently, a customer of one of Australia's major banks, I won't tell you which bank, I'm fed up with this you're not living in the right country stuff on the internet. That's not the way the internet works.
And I'm not going to demonstrate again, because Dr. Ron will just stick it in the best of.
The panel.
I didn't even use a smidgen of my 500.
I was really surprised.
Get an imagination, kids. Come on. Oops, I should leave now.
Great advice there.
PA Semi make server-grade multi-core architecture with 8 processors in the one machine.
You're so antisocial. You know, you're always on that computer, rah, 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 rah.
So when is someone going to be honest and rein in the marketroids?
She's like super.
Yeah, you're only as good as your last podcast.
Don't shake the baby.
Don't shake the baby.
Kick the baby.
Apple has apologised.
Don't kick the baby.
I just want to click an XE and have this work.
It's illegal, isn't it?
Yes. You're right.
Oh, sorry.
This is the point of the story.
Ain't nobody stranger.
Oh. Telstra's stuff up of the week.
Telstra billing.
Now,
Telstra required to provide access.
A Telstra spokesperson was unable to comment.
Well, there you go. This soul's parting words.
God.
Telstra have been blamed.
Now,
Telstra, let's face it, Telstra has a huge PR problem.
Entertaining.
I was in until you said maggots.
Like a Dr. Evil's boardroom.
Yeah. No.
This one.
Tech Talk Radio encourages responsible downloading and viewing of television and copyright content.
Don't worry about Kaspersky. Get into your local road sign.
Yeah.
Informative.
And what's Android like as an operating system?
There's a debate as to whether by turning off the ads, you're effectively stealing the content.
Independent.
We're listening to Andrew, Dr. Lauren, Dustin and Graham. Thanks for listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hey, well done there, Dr. Ron. Thanks for a very interesting rap. Gee whiz.
Don't kick the baby.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio, our post-250th show. Yeah, we've been doing this for some time now, and we'll continue to keep doing it until people stop complaining. I guess that's what they say, isn't it?
Or until we get sued or one or the other.
Oh, don't wish that upon us. Don't. Everything's allegedly in this show. So, here we are, 250 shows down, and boy, has a lot changed, and all sorts of things, as I was alluding to in the opener that I did, from politics through to technology in the last 5 years. Wow, what a sort of change it's been, with all new mobile communications kicking in big time. Oh, where will we be in 5 years' time? Will we be here? Who knows?
It's been an amazing ride. I was looking at some of the stuff that we were talking about in the first season, back in 2004. We're talking about, the rumoured new this Blu-ray disc technology, and that was quite controversial at the time.
I've had a bit of a dig back through into some of the old promos too, so you'll hear a few of those coming up through later on in today's show as well.
Looking forward to it. That'll be good.
Some things that we just haven't heard for some time. They've come back out. But nothing's really changed with a lot of things, especially some of the big manufacturers, the big names in technology. They're still there. We're still talking about them. Sometimes good, sometimes not so good. But anyway, I'm sure that'll continue. And I guess one of the great things is our listeners. We've got a great bunch of listeners. We get regular emails from them. We get all sorts of scathing or bouquet-ish type sort of emails, which is great. We got our chat, which is going. The guys are just logging in now. We're competing with some very big television tonight. So stick with us, guys. Don't turn the telly on. And hopefully we'll deliver what we normally do in 2 hours of locally made tech radio. Anyway, lots has happened to me this week, Dr. Ron. JD is here and Graham is here, and I'm sure you're all along the same lines. We've got Microsoft things happening. Oh, it's all getting very excited. But, Dr. Ron, how's your week? You've got lots of Coro too, haven't you?
I have got plenty of correspondence. I've been a bit croaky. The news was a bit of a croaky recording there, but just getting over a bit of a bug. But I think I'm on the mend now.
Yeah.
Yes, that time. It's not really that time of the year. It's springtime here, so
you wouldn't know it outside. No. But then again, my little daughter, Georgie, who's sitting right here next to me at the moment, she hasn't seen rain like this. She's 7 years old. She has not seen rain like this in this city. And that's unusual for us, isn't it? Well, maybe the dams might go up. A bit like the interest rates.
See the rain up around Yarra Junction way today on the news, though. They're all underwater there. They've been flooded.
And even up north in Queensland and all those sort of places, they caught the big dust storm last week. What a week it's been in that sort of thing. We'll talk about that later on too, I guess.
Dust storm was amazing in Sydney.
Yeah, there's some interesting data centre stuff coming up about that. Stay tuned. Listen in.
The dust storm thing I found interesting was one of the first things I did was I hit Google Images and I was remembering the Melbourne dust storm from about 20 years ago, 83?
83,
just after the fires.
And
I knew it was somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah, one of the first things I did was key into Google Images Melbourne dust storm and found some great photos from back then. It's amazing how the technology sort of helps us to remember those things. It's how easy it is to access those sorts of photos these days.
I was listening to someone at work today talking about an article they came across about Wikipedia. You know, the online dictionary that people can now edit and update and do all that. It's getting slow. It's slowed down. It's got too much information in it. So they're actually changing the guidelines and the rules and regulations about and how people can update Wikipedia now, which is good. It's probably after, you know, great incidents like Michael Jackson, his sudden demise, and half the world wanted to update his entry in Wikipedia. Yes. So, you know, incidents like that obviously caused these guys to have a bit of a rethink. So, yeah.
And neither of those things would have been around when the show started in 2004, they would have been just projects getting started on the internet then.
It's like streaming.
They wouldn't certainly have had the level of pervasiveness in the society that they do now.
I don't think we had a concept of social networking in 2004. We don't think we had Facebook. We certainly didn't have Twitter. Mm. We might have just had MySpace taking off. I'm not sure.
Sorry, I'm just reading the chat. They're getting stuck into you already.
They do that. They're all over it.
They haven't
it.
Let you live your music down for a while either, just between, yeah, anyway, but that's another story.
If you'll let me in charge of the music again one week, I don't think that's going to happen again, though.
Absolutely.
Correspondence this week, Andrew, from Ross in Jacksonville, Florida. Ross says, hello, just listened to another great show via the pod. Then I listened to Tech Talk. No, he doesn't say that.
Is he an expat? Don't be like that.
Ross says, you guys need to get out more. You need to go on holidays so you understand what Skype does. The comments in show 249, which was last week, were a little bit off the mark. Go into an internet cafe in any popular tourist destination, says Ross, around the world, and all the machines will have Skype pre-installed, and most of the customers will be on Skype. Many of us who live overseas have a Skype-in number back in Australia, and on this end, we set Skype to divert to our local cell phone. Bingo, very, very cheap international calls. The friends and families just call a local, in brackets, Sydney number. No techie knowledge is required. They're not even aware they're using Skype. If your normal residential Australian Skype probably does not offer much, but to normal travellers, it is just brilliant and booming. Thanks for the feedback, Ross.
Excellent, Ross. Yes, he doesn't obviously live in this part of the world, but yeah, obviously it is probably fairly big out there in the touristy type of sort of things. Mm. Even Lauren, who works in our office, even today she was saying she's installed Skype up and doing video chats and things like that. It's good
there
stuff. Don't get me wrong. It's good stuff. And Adam's had a go at it over the course of time with the Skype on the mobile sort of dilemmas. But hey, my mobile has a Skype number and people can ring it. It's great. And yes, Ross, you're dead on the money there. It's a great service.
People don't even realise they're ringing a Skype service. It just looks like a normal phone number.
No, that's very true.
Correspondence from Roy. Roy says, regarding the last couple of weeks' podcasts, EP 250 should be episode 38. The link to the podcast takes you to another week's show, .mp3.mp2.
Can you tell I've been busy?
I've missed the show for September 21st. I've been rechecking all week. I need my fix of current Tech Talk radio. Roy, we're very sorry.
Sorry, it's the drugs, the medication I'm on. It's really good when I do the podcast.
I could have sworn I uploaded it.
Oh, yeah, you have. It's not you, Graham. It'll be me doing the links.
Sorry, Roy. We'll get that fixed for you.
I'll have another look at that tonight at some ungodly hour of the morning and see if I can give you a different program there instead. But
you can always go to our forum as well, forum.techtalkradio.com.au. There's duplicate show notes there with links that might work, hopefully, as well. From Adam Turner. You know Adam Turner?
Oh, yeah.
Popular.
Had a better offer tonight.
Frequent contributor. He did have a better offer. He explains he's got a big day in Sydney tomorrow. He says, I'm a guest on Seamus Byrne's new bite-size vodcast. A vodcast is a video podcast. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow night, which is recorded live at the Shelbourne Hotel in Sussex Street. I need to get my beauty sleep or I'll be wrecked by the time I get on stage. Maybe you could give it a plug tonight, Adam.
Consider a plug
in case any Sydney-siders want to rock up. The doors open at 6. Seamus says there's not a lot of room left, but if people mention Tech Talk Radio at the door, they'll do their best to fit them in. So it's at the Shelbourne Hotel in Sussex Street, Sydney, tomorrow morning.
Okay, that's good.
There we go.
Excellent.
That's our correspondence for the week, Andrew, for the 250th episode.
Well, a couple of interesting things this evening that have happened. our local telephone exchange, which probably means nothing to anyone else listening outside of our broadcasting area, finally managed to, because our exchange was very special. It was on the Telstra hit list. They wouldn't let anyone in to compete.
This is one of the controversial ones where they said, no, it's full, but a determination was made against Telstra.
Exactly. Mm. So as a result, we've got one of the very first ISPs to come into the environment, into that full space, was iiNet or the Chime Network. And I know I've basically moved my ADSL offerings across over to them. So I'm looking forward.
You've got ADSL 2 already working or...?
October the 3rd, I think it will be turned on. But going naked, baby. Take my clothes off. Go naked.
What does that mean, going naked, having naked DSL? Because you hear about this.
It means you take your shirt off, and it means you take your shorts off, and basically get into it.
It's like you're just on the radio.
Definitely make sure we turn off the video chatting. Yes,
No, basically, well, you know what it is. But for those listeners out there, it's the new way of getting your internet into your house. That is, without a telephone line. Or it's still the copper that comes in off the street, but there's no phone number associated with it. So you don't pay line rental, basically, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, so ADSL traditionally has been on a phone line, and it's been an extra service on your existing phone line. So your phone keeps working the same way it always has.
Correct.
And you run ADSL down effectively on a different channel on the same wire.
That's right.
And, so what you're saying is now you can have it without having to have the phone service on the line.
Yeah, you don't have to pay the telco, the incumbent.
So if you put if you connect a telephone to it, it won't work.
No, that's right. But if you connect a voice over IP service to it, which comes as part of the package that I'm getting, you can actually keep the number, the fixed line number. You know,
you can take that to a voice over IP service.
Yeah, the 10-digit number, which is assigned to that number right now, can go over and be voice over IP number. So no one needs to know. Mm. Now, isn't that a good idea? And then with the actual, a lot of companies offer good packages for voice over IP. And the one that I've got means I make free free local and national calls. So no untimed, just go for gold. Make as many calls as you like. Really good for families on the go. The kids that want to ring up and speak to Billy down the corner or whatever, yeah, go for your life.
I saw that. There's a fair use policy on it, but I think you'd be doing hard to break that, though.
Wouldn't you? Mm. So it is exciting times around at our place because we've finally been able to, you know, move into the new generation. Like, what are we? We're 9 or 10 kilometres from the city, and finally we've got an exchange, which is ADSL2. So if you're in the country, don't think it's quite so bad because we have it too here in the city. Anyway, that was some good news for the day. JD, what have you been up to? You've still got the Mac there?
Have you loaded it up? I have. No, I still haven't played with Snow Leopard.
No, haven't you?
Leaving that for a bit.
What are we waiting for? The next patch, the next version or something of the Leopard?
Well, that, and also I still run a G5 at home, so I'd be a bit...
Oh, well, there you go.
A bit in strife trying to do it there, but I am looking for a second-hand iMac to upgrade to the Intel processor, finally.
Second-hand iMac. Oh, yeah. Mm. I thought people hung on to their Macs.
They do.
So that's going to
They hold their value, even though the PC processors are now pretty much redundant with Snow Leopard. They're still holding their value, which is surprising. I was expecting it all to drop through the floor, but they're still quite expensive.
Is there any Apple news this week of interest? I must admit, I haven't seen any.
Not a huge amount of news. There's a lot of speculation. It's been there for a while about a new series of iMacs and MacBooks coming out shortly, but no one's really all that sure about what they're going to have. There's some suggestions they're all going to have SD card slots in them, so the MacBooks already do, but the iMacs don't. And there's been a bit of a chat about a new docking technology that Apple and Intel have been working on that uses fiber optics instead of serial copper to transfer data between, for example, a tablet device that wants a small connector that does everything, and printers and other machines. Okay. So a little bit of news, but all speculation. There's nothing hard yet.
Yeah, well, the speculation's what it's all about, isn't it? It's the wish list, and then you wait for the man to get up on stage in the runners.
That's right.
And hold your breath. It's a bit like watching the AFL Grand Final in a lot of respect. Wasn't that a good game on the weekend? But anyway, it's not a sporting show. What else was I going to say? Dr. Ron, Wacom.
Now, I have it on good authority. It's pronounced Wacom. Did you know that?
Wow. Really?
Yes, Adam.
In my whole life, I've been calling it Wacom. Am I wrong?
I've got some news for the Wacom people. The rest of the world says Wacom, but Adam reliably informs me. They had a meeting with the CEO, and the CEO was saying, pronouncing it Wacom. So we said we should call it Wacom. That's how
Wacom
they think it should be pronounced. But I think you'd be forgiven for saying Wacom because everyone else in the world
says
Wacom. That's
us being Australian, isn't it?
Maybe that's what it is. It's the Australian
So overseas, you're saying they call them Wacoms?
Well, that's what they call them. At Wacom, they say, we're Wacom.
Huh.
Cool. There you go. We have a tablet, a bamboo tablet to give away tonight. We're going to be announcing the runners-up and the winner a little bit later in the program. But we've made a decision. Thank you to everybody who emailed us with all of your suggestions, applications, and your funny emails that were all really good. But we've made
a
decision.
Entries are now closed.
Entries are now closed. No point emailing. Correspondence will not be entered into.
Yep, no worries. I think the entries closed at the last goal on the AFL Grand Final.
I think that was about right.
That's about it when it all closed.
Yes, but thank you for everybody for all of your contributions. It's been great. It's good to see that there's so many people keen on the technology getting into it.
It's good. I think they're fantastic devices, and the product's about to evolve as well because, as I say, I use them at work. I program my little function keys up there, despite what some people say about F1 and F2. Someone said to me the other day, F1 should always be for help. I said, well, not when you've only got a choice of two buttons. So you can program them as you like.
That's the one. Now, Warlock in our chat room says, oh, I said it about 5 minutes ago, this evening I've won the Wacom tablet, the Wacom tablet. Everyone said, really? And I said, yeah, good try. If you want to join us in our chat room, go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au. You can chat live with us. We're all there now.
You can. Even Georgie's here at the moment. Stand up, Georgie. Come over here to this microphone. Now, Georgie is a 7-year-old girl. When we first started this radio program, you were 2. Did you? You probably don't remember that, but you probably remember the radio show of the course of time. And you've been on the radio show all the time. What's your favourite piece of technology at the moment? Is it the green device you've nicked from Mum?
No, it's not.
What is it?
It's like working on computers and helping people at my classroom to talk about what's going on around the land and how zombies are like all those things for technology and
zombies. Do you know what a zombie is?
Yes, I do.
What's a zombie?
It's something where someone sends a zombie over to another company and the company gets activated and it tries to explode another company and wrecks it, and so the company won't work anymore, and so the other people, just so they can be more popular.
It doesn't sound like a zombie is a good thing. It sounds like it's a very, very bad thing.
That's very correct.
Well, why do people make zombies, do you know? Are they just trying to make money, or are they trying to disrupt other people's business?
They're trying to disrupt people's businesses,
yeah,
and get more money to themselves so they can spend more money on their stuff. It's for those people that just want all the money, they can't do that.
When you said zombies first, I was thinking of those monsters like in horror movies, and they walk around late at night time and they are scary things. But you're talking about internet zombies.
Yeah.
Ah. Don't you think it's amazing how 7-year-olds have adapted to the new technology that's out there? Like this one here, Georgie in particular, has been pestering me for ages for a netbook, would you believe?
Do you know what a netbook is, Georgie?
Yes, I do.
Ah. I don't think I knew what a netbook was when I was 7 years old. And I also want to know, what's the green thing you've stolen from your mum?
I was wondering that.
She's not listening. It's okay. You can tell everyone.
You can tell.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
The iPod.
Oh, yeah, the iPod.
Yeah, Mum always goes around the house looking for... Because you remember I gave it to her for Christmas and she only got it out of the box sort of like a month or two ago. Well, Georgie's commandeered it now, so she uses it, jumps on the trampoline, listens to it. That's where it's at the moment.
Fair enough.
See, we own an Apple device in our family.
What do you listen to on Mum's iPod?
Madonna and ABBA and, yeah, all those songs.
That's the same stuff I used to listen to on my Walkman when I was young. You know what a Walkman is?
No.
Never heard of a Walkman?
No.
Nah.
Sorry, Sony.
Old technology.
What about a record? Do you know what a record was?
Yeah, I think so.
They're those black things with holes in the middle of them. Mm. We used to listen to them when we were young, didn't we? Everybody says he knowingly.
Now, I've been meaning to ask you something as well, Georgie, for a long time. Sometimes I get picture messages on my phone from your dad, and they're funny photographs of some pretty strange things, and I think... What's your dad doing sending me those photos? You wouldn't know anything about those mystery photo messages I get sometimes, would you?
Dad's a mystery person.
Well, he is. He is, but I thought you might have an explanation. No? Don't play with your dad's phone and take photographs?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. In fact, I steal it in the night and then I play on it.
Does he not?
He doesn't even know that. He didn't know that, did he?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. I'll just check my send log and see what's going on. But anyway.
You've been wondering why the battery life isn't lasting.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I'm not running Android. Anyway, there you go. So there's a bit of a look on life from a beautiful seven-year-old who's coming up in the world who wants a netbook, pesters me for a netbook, and I keep saying, not until your teacher says that you can have a netbook and you have one. But anyway, we're into the little white things in ears at the moment. But, and there's Georgie's look on zombies too, which I think is quite cute, really. Watching too much Four Corners, did you say before? You saw that on Four Corners? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Excellent. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Andrew McComb, Graham is in this evening. JD is in this evening. It's our 250th show, and, of course, Georgie's in this evening as well. So we'll probably hear from her later. You've probably heard her every show. I think there's a little grab of Georgie there saying, yeah, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. So there you go. That's the seven-year-old version that was here. All right, let's talk about a few other things that's going on in the world. Actually, before I do that, can I tell you about an experience with Telstra today?
We've got lots of follow-up things. Firstly, I want to hear about your story with Telstra. How'd you go?
Well, it just infuriates me the way that you get telemarketing these days. But what happened in a situation today in the office? I got a phone call from Telstra, a woman purporting to be from Telstra, saying, I'd like to make sure that you're getting the best value for money in your phone system in the office there. And I said, oh, okay, no worries, off you go. And she said, before I can do that, I need to confirm your date of birth. I said, I don't think I can do that. She said, why not? And I said, because you called me. I didn't call you. Oh, what does that matter? I said, well, you could be from anywhere. You may not be from Telstra. You may be from anywhere. And I can't give you that information over the phone. Oh, but I want to be able to help you with your phone bill, she said. I said, I'm sorry. I can't give you that information over the phone. Then she went on and said, this call could be monitored and recorded for call coaching. I said, that's nice.
When they say that, I usually say, oh, thanks, hang on a minute, I'll just hit the record button. There we go.
Do you? Why do you do that?
Just they go, it means that we're recording it. And I say, well, no, you've just given me permission to record it as well, so I am.
Absolutely. Anyway, so there you go. If you get those phone calls, and I think that you'd never give away personal information if someone rang you, because you don't know who they really are. You can't verify that they are who they claim to be.
That's right, yep.
So that was my grief. And Telstra, you should know better. An organisation like that going around ringing customers up, if they wanted to, you know, there should be like a secret message on the account or something. You know, what's your secret password? And fair enough, or, you know, you tell us what I should be looking at, something like that. But not asking date of birth and questions like that.
Yeah, the right way to do that is to say, we want to talk to you. Ring us back on the number that you know, the number that's printed on your bill. And quote this reference number, and then you'll get through to the right person.
Yeah.
That's the way it ought to be done.
Yeah. It almost sounds like a phishing telephone call.
Exactly.
Like, I'm certain that it was a legitimate call, but Telstra, in their stupidity, don't realise, you know, how vulnerable people are. Anybody could ring anybody up and say, oh, hi, I work for Telstra. What's your date of birth? Yep. I obviously already know your name and your phone number. If I get your date of birth, there's a few things I've got there now which could seriously compromise your identity and your security.
Yeah, and of course the number that comes up on the call is private.
Of course it is. Mm.
Yep. So there's a lesson.
But that number that comes up on the call can also be faked, so you don't necessarily need to trust that. If someone rings you, don't trust them.
Very good.
No matter what the caller ID says.
Good advice. Now, speaking of Telstra incidents, Graham, you last week were telling us about how you were subscribed to a service that you didn't require. You didn't even get the choice to opt in. They just opted you on.
Yep, they did.
So what was it? It was some extra big pawn thing on your Telstra mobile that you didn't...
Still no idea who it really was. It claimed to be from Big Pond. The sender ID on the text message said Big Pond. It didn't have a number. It just had the word Big Pond. It looks like it was probably an outside company, but it's not very clear. Just pretending to be Big Pond. And faking the sender, like I was saying, is possible in some circumstances. Telstra's solution eventually was to block all premium services, premium SMSs and those sorts of services on my number so that those charges won't go through. And that's where it's been left. I'm anxiously awaiting the next bill to make sure that there's no charges on it.
And so you've spoken to Telstra, and they've said that you're not going to be charged for anything because you've... Or what did they say?
About the third person I spoke to at Telstra said, oh, yeah, it's really easy to fix that. All we do is we block these services then they can't charge you for anything that hasn't been approved.
So you're telling me
that... It took me three phone calls and an hour and a half on the phone to get to the person who said that.
Yeah, those telemarketers probably don't know that. So you're telling me that you can ring the phone company up and say,
The only person who can charge me is you, and well, you can, don't allow anyone else to add those charges.
You can block
charges.
Those premium services, though.
Well, that'd be good. Those premium services, because someone could unscrupulously sign you up to those if you weren't too careful, especially
right,
if you're a user of them.
Exactly right. What it does mean that if I do actually want to use one of them, if I want to use one of these, you know, SMS services that gives me, you know, extra ringtones or whatever, then I'm blocked from doing that. And if I want to use one of those, I'd have to ring them up and remove the block.
Mm.
So I'm anxiously awaiting the next bill to see what happens, and also to see if any of my complaints have moved Telstra to provide me with any sort of refund or
any sort of resolution,
any sort
I guess.
Of, compensation for all the messing around and the many phone calls and the hours on the phone, mm-hmm. at my cost, by the way, having to ring a number that they charge me to be on air talking. So one of the helpful people there at Telstra said, "Oh, look, we can't really provide you with any compensation for anything. It's
well, it doesn't seem to be their fault. But then again, if it is a big pond issue,
well, it's their fault if they're allowing people to charge.
But if someone's fraudulently signing you up, then it's a bit like Optus blocking numbers to certain areas. That's just
no,
not
but
awesome.
Telstra. I mean, if I just walked up to Telstra and said, "Oh, I'm from XYZ company and I want to charge Dr. Ron $50 a month on his phone bill." Is that Telstra's fault if they then charge Dr. Ron $50 a month on his phone bill and
exactly.
send the money on to me?
Telstra
should be better than that. They should know not to do that.
That's right. They're making no effort whatsoever to verify the credentials of the person who's putting this service on Graham's account.
They're
trying
to verify my credentials in a cold call.
Yes.
Whoa. There's been a few interesting things in the chat there. I noticed some of the boys have been saying, you should have asked her date of birth. No, I shouldn't have suggested. I shouldn't have, whoever
you show
that
me
suggested.
Yours and I'll show you mine.
Absolutely. Mm. And there's another one here. If she tell her your date of birth but make it off by a day, and if she's fishing, she won't realise it. Well, yeah, there's a valid thing. I'll try that next time. Mm. Give them a dodgy date of birth and see what they say.
Mm.
Good on you, boys. Keep them coming. chat.techtalkradio.com.au if you've been you had those funny telemarketer phone calls. Tell us how you got out of them.
Coincidental to my other story, I had another run-in with Telstra during the course of the week after that.
Really?
Yep. I had a phone call on one. They left a voicemail message for me to ring them back and quote a reference number.
Yeah.
And I rang them back and quoted the reference number. And they said, "Oh, you've forgotten to pay your bill." So whether it was because I was stirring up trouble and they went and checked to see whether I'd paid my last bill, I hadn't paid it. It was, you know, a week overdue or something. Nothing too extreme.
Nice of them to call you, though.
Yeah, they called me and they said, "Yeah, look, ring us back, quote this reference number." I rang them back. I did that. They said, "Look, it's just a mistake. I'll pay it tonight. Can you just, you know, hold off for a couple of days before you actually suspend my number or anything like that?" And they said, "Yeah, sure, we'll do that. We'll you know, put an extra few days on it." And I went home and I paid it that night.
Yeah.
And then the next day, guess what happened?
The phone got cut off.
No. Got another phone call, leaving another voicemail message, different voice,
saying that it was still
saying,
unpaid.
Yeah, saying, "Please ring me back on this reference, you know, with this reference number." And I rang back with a reference number, and they said, "You haven't paid your bill." And I said, "Well, yeah, I have. Do you guys even talk to each other?"
Yeah, so, that's the problem with that organisation. The left hand doesn't know what the other left hand is doing.
So they could leave a comment on your account saying
And the first guy I spoke to on day one said that he had done that. And when I pressed the second person I spoke to on day two, they said, "Oh, yeah, we can see that it's been extended." So,
but no notation that you said...
But there was no notation on the account. So why they didn't check to see whether there was an extension on it before they rang me, I don't know. But they're just not checking. They're not doing their jobs.
Mm. Oh, well, there you go. Hopefully that's enough for this evening.
Mm.
We will be talking... One of the Telstra guys quit today too, by the way. Do you know who that was?
No.
When I say one of the Telstra guys, one of the old school decided he was going to hang up his boots. It was Managing Director of Telstra's Customer Group, David Moffat, resigned after almost a decade with the telco. Moffat was responsible for managing the provisioning of fixed and mobile communications as well as broadband and entertainment services for Telstra's consumer arm.
So he wouldn't have been affected by the potential split by the sounds of things. So
I don't think so, but Moffat's been there, as I say, for 10 years, which was, I think, even before the Three Amigos time too. So he's probably ridden the wave of turbulence in that organisation.
Time to move on.
Yeah, yeah. You could only handle that for so long, I would have thought. So anyway. Now, in other interesting news this week, the National Broadband Network Company is in talks on buying Transact. Now, Transact, from my understanding, is a Canberran ISP. They have the fibre network that goes all the way around.
Yeah, high-speed fibre network in Canberra, yeah.
Exactly. And now the NBN's saying, well, you've got fibre, we want it.
We want it. We'll buy you.
Absolutely. Yeah, why not? And, of course, obviously, this is what they're going to try and do with the Telstra wholesale arm when they wholesale? Yeah, the infrastructure people to buy all the network there to sort of hopefully, reading between the lines, stop the replication.
Integrate it into their network and add on the extras that you need.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
So a Transact spokesperson said that they didn't want to comment on it at this point in time. So denial is meaning that, yes, that's obviously the case. So we'll have to watch and wait and see. Maybe the NBN's starting to ramp up a little bit and they're going out to acquire equipment and plant. Good time to do it. You get 50% off your tax refund at the moment.
Well, of course, they promised
under 2 mil, and they would be at the moment. So,
so they promised that they would be building the network by now, and of course, we know that full well that they haven't, you know, moved as much as a piece of wire. So, acquiring the network, I suppose, gives them a claim to have done something.
Yes, it does. Anyway, watch this space, see how it goes. One of the other interesting things technologically-wise, which I guess seeing is believing, during the course of the week, there was a trade show in which Emo Labs, which is a bit of a sound organisation, guys, some high-tech guys, they've released the first invisible speakers. I thought,
excuse me?
Invisible.
What? I thought, hang on a minute, is this not
like
April?
A cone of silence,
yeah,
is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hang on a minute, it's not like April Fool's Day or anything, is it? No, no, because we're in the last week of September. Anyway, what these guys have actually done is they've got a little membrane.
Well, oh, yes.
Which is a clear acetate. In fact, what I'll do is I'll let the boss tell you all about this, and we'll talk about it after this.
Yeah, so we've developed a new speaker technology that the benefit of this technology is it aligns the voice and video so that it comes right off the screen, and it gives you a thin package with great sound quality. So the way we do that is we take a clear material like this, we embed it on top of the TV. Along this edge is a thin piezo actuator that they move back and forth this way, microflexing the membrane this way. And so this is the speaker on the left, this is the speaker on the right. We clamp the center so you get stereo, and that delivers the sound.
So there you go, pretty impressive. A small membrane, a piece of plastic, a bit of acetate, that sits over your screen.
Can you imagine the sound out of a 50-inch plasma TV with one of those on it?
Would it sound good or not?
Well, they did go on in that show. It's a bit hard to reproduce the quality of sound, but yes. it did actually sound and look quite good.
It's certainly for your centre speaker, as you were saying, so that everything's centred on the TV. For your centre speaker for the voice channel, at least, it'd be all right.
Hmm. Yeah. But I thought, that's not bad. That's good innovation. A membrane that sits over the top. He was also asked about whether it degrades the visual quality of the image behind the membrane. He said, no, not at all. Obviously, they clamp it in the middle. So the actual screen itself vibrates. So I guess it's good.
Yeah, I wonder about the vibration on the screen, though.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. But in technological sense, they've built it, and it works, and it seemed really relatively good. Good application on small screen devices such as laptops, netbooks, and other small devices. I thought that was pretty good. It's logical, really, isn't it?
There's a few demo videos around. If you Google invisible speakers or go to the Emo Labs website, you can have a look at some demos there and get a bit of more of an understanding of what it's all about.
Fantastic technology. It begs the question, if you want a touch screen, you won't be able to have one of these on it?
That might be a bit tricky, or you'll go mute. You'll mute the sound mute when the you screen. Touch it. Mm. Unless they have a membrane on a membrane with a bit of an air cavity, but that's getting silly,
carried away.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh well,
here's a thought though. Not on a touchscreen, you might not use it for sound, but you might use it for a tactile feedback, so that you get a different feel, a different texture.
So when
texture.
You're holding a screen as if it's your PlayStation steering wheel. And the screen's vibrating.
Well, that wasn't quite
what
I was thinking about, but just so that you can feel a tick on your when you press the button.
Oh,
so
I
you
see.
Get you get a little click feel. You could do that with that sort of technology.
You could,
yeah.
Anyway, there's a bit of new evolution in our 250th show. Had to find something that was new and whiz-bang.
Yeah, and the 500th show, we'll be saying, yeah, remember when we were talking about this and now we've all got them on our laptops.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, Google been taken to court for forgery, of all things. French publishers and authors have taken Google to court, saying that the US giant was counterfeiting their books by digitising them for sale online.
That's all right, shock horror. They can opt out and elect to have Google not put them on if they
want
to.
That's right, can't they?
Come on.
You can opt out.
Yeah, get on board.
So they'll just do it and...
Well, they are. Yeah. They're just doing it. They're just digitising every book that exists and putting it online. If you don't like it, then you can ask them to remove it. They will.
This is so typical of the American system where you have to opt out as opposed to like here in Australia where you have to opt into something.
And if you want to sue them and settle for, you know, $5 billion, Google say, oh, yeah, no worries, check or cash or put it on your Amex card. They don't care.
Absolutely.
But money is not an object.
Mm. People have been saying it's unacceptable that someone would arrogantly take your books and digitise them without asking.
It is not acceptable.
I have to agree with that, you know.
Well, we'll talk about that later, no doubt.
So, Mr. De La Marantieri reckons that up to 4,000 works published by his group have been digitised by Google without his consent. And, so obviously they're going to cop a bit of flack.
So do they pay him royalties every time someone reads the book?
Nope.
No.
Nope. Mm. No, it's not how it works. Not how Google works.
Mm. All right, watch out, Google. Are they above the law? I guess time will tell as we see these sort of... And there'll be more of these ones pop up, let me tell you. Nintendo, the games, the war on games continues. And Nintendo's cutting its price on the Wii games console even more. This is in response to, I think, Sony that did it the other day. They dropped $100 off the console here in Australia. And now Nintendo said it would reduce the price of the Wii in Japan to 20,000 yen, about 250 Australian dollars from October 1. Now,
that's cheap, isn't it? 250 for a Wii.
So cheap. Now, Georgie's got a Nintendo DS. And, you know, of course...
That's the handheld version.
The new DSi came out the other day, and she wanted to get that too, didn't she? But no, stingy dad said, no, you can't have one of those. But do you want a Nintendo Wii?
Well, yes, I do, because I played on it before when I was in hospital, and it's really fun. They have sport games and other types of games. And
it keeps you fit, doesn't it? Tell dad, it keeps you fit.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because
you keep moving around.
Hmm.
It's good for you. Yeah.
All right, we'll have to check with Santa, I think, on that one. See if there's one in the stocking maybe later in the year. Who knows? Who knows? You've got to be good, though.
I've already ordered it.
Oh.
There you go. She's working for a French book company already, isn't she?
Have you already written to Santa? It's September, though. It's not Christmas time yet.
It's just because I don't want to, forget the things that I really want.
You've added it to your list, haven't you?
Yeah, because my mum keeps on throwing these magazines out, so I have to write them fast.
Do you remember when you grew up, there was no such thing as a toy catalogue? And have you been to the junk mail in your mailbox lately? Every week you pull out a new one, and guess who goes straight for them? The youngsters in the family, don't you? Yeah, it's good for Georgie, that's good for radio. Yeah, you've got to say me. That's how radio works. All right, so there you go. Nintendo's going to cut their price a little bit, so you never know. You're like in a big city. There you go. You can take that article away. In other interesting news, Apple and M&M may face a trial over iTunes. Once again, I'm taking a leaf out of Apple's book. Google's book. Apple seemed to have put up their own versions of M&M's tracks on their iTunes store, and they didn't ask him, apparently.
Mm.
So, and I know the Beatles are there now. Didn't Yoko say finally that the Beatles can come up on iTunes? So we might start being able to download the White Album.
Now that there's finally a digital version released.
Yes, yes. But Apple and rapper Eminem are obviously heading to trial because they're unable to resolve the lawsuit over whether the singer songs could be used on the popular iTunes service. Eminem's music publisher, 8 Miles Style, and another plaintiff, Martin L. Affiliated, are claiming in a lawsuit that Apple was never authorised to use 93 songs in a downloadable format on iTunes. There you go. So don't go putting things up that you potentially shouldn't have. And in other music news this week, singer Lily Allen, do you know who she is?
Yes. She's a big, Warlock's a big fan in the chat room. He was raving before about wanting you to play Lily Allen tonight.
And I didn't mind some of her songs, to be quite honest, until I heard her little rant. And...
Or until you read the lyrics?
Well, she started to blog
Has she?
To protest illegal sharing of music.
Which would be good.
Yeah. Now, the issue is hot topic in the UK at the moment, and thanks to the proposed laws that would see internet connections of offenders temporarily suspended. Okay. Now, Alan then got caught up nicking other people's words for the said blog, prompting claims that she's hypocrite from other bloggers and tech journalists, i.e. plagiarism.
So she's alleged to have copied other people's blog entries and put them in her blog.
Yes. Oh. But the story continues.
But wait, there's more.
Alan then apologised for the infringements and gets flamed by hundreds of people in the comments.
Oh. Okay, so she's made admissions.
Yeah, she's gone off and said this and then nicked words and cut and paste people's and plagiarised and then been shot down. Then, to make matters worse, bloggers discover that Alan is hosting unauthorised mixtapes of her official website featuring songs by dozens of other artists, including Jay-Z, Jefferson Airplane and The Kinks. Uh-oh.
So the thing she was complaining about, she was actually doing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So then Alan offers a second apology, saying that I made those mixtapes 5 years ago and I didn't have the knowledge or of the workings of the music industry back then. This is sounding like ignorance is no excuse. Then Alan says that she has no plans to make another record and isn't...
Now, bat ball going home.
And isn't supporting tough new sanctions against file sharers out of personal interest.
Mm.
And then finally, Alan deletes the blog, saying on Twitter, I'm proud of the fact that I've been involved with this debate, but I'm passing the baton on to other artists.
Fair enough.
Well done. Mm. Well done. That's a really good, you know, well, it's getting too hot. Can't stand the heat. Get out of the fire. Delete blog. Pass it on Twitter as well, too. So there you go. That would have been a short little tweet.
I didn't know you could follow Lily Allen on Twitter. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
You probably can't anymore.
Probably.
No, well, she's probably deleted herself.
She'd be very quiet from now on. But it also begs the question whether she, like so many of these high-profile people, companies, radio shows, etc., whether they actually write their own blogs or not, and whether in fact someone else had written that for her, and she's just copying the
and she's now in damage control because of someone that
possibly.
She's given the task.
I'm not saying that that's the case, but
or maybe
the case
maybe she should have got somebody else to write it for her. Well, the other possibility, yeah.
Yes, and then put up a little disclaimer on the bottom saying this was not written by me. It was written by one of my minders. Mm. Hey, you're listening to TikTok Radio. Dr. Ron, Andrew, JD in for the 250th show. And, of course, seven-year-old little legend sitting next to me here keeps pointing a finger at me when I keep saying that. And we're going to take a break and we'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
TikTok Radio.
I'm Lydia Davis. I'm an Aussie living in Palo Alto, which is in Silicon Valley, California, just up the road from San Fran, and it is wonderful. Join me on Tech Talk Radio, and I'll be giving you an insight into just what it's like living here. Let me tell you, it is not what it's cracked up to be.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Ah, back again. Welcome back, everyone. It's nearly that time of the night. Before we get on and hear Adam Turner's view from the couch, we're going to hear a little bit about, we're going to announce the Wacom winner. But before we do the Wacom winner, during the break we've just had, the Dr. One was telling me all about GPS units and distracting things. You've been active in your blog about this sort of stuff, Dr. Ron. Do tell.
I have been active in my blog. I did a bit of a blog rant during the week. There was a story that was written by a journalist for Fairfax Digital during the week, start of last week, and it's been published in all of the Fairfax-type publications. It says that the new road rules that are going to be introduced in Australia are going to threaten phone GPS and that sat-nav apps could be heading for a dead end. It's the most beat-up story and the most ridiculously...
Yeah,
it is a sensationalised story. It's wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. Let me just explain. What they've said in the mainstream media is that new road rules are going to be introduced. That's correct.
This is in Victoria only, anyone listening out of interstate?
Well, yeah, what I'm talking about is Victoria, but the road rules are national. They're going to be rolled out across all states and territories eventually.
Because we have an agreement to have uniform laws of these kinds, do we?
As much as we possibly can. Yeah. That's right, Graham. So there's a current road rule that prohibits drivers from using a handheld mobile phone while they're driving.
Now, that can be expensive if you get caught.
Well, it can be. It's very simple, right? If you're a driver and you're using a handheld telephone while you're driving, it's an offence.
No, I mean, sticking it up to your ear, even picking it up whilst you're driving.
If you're picking it up while you're driving,
you can't even touch the thing while you're driving.
That's right. If you're texting while you're driving, it's illegal.
Well, people should be shot for doing that.
If you're updating your Google Latitude while you're driving, whatever, you don't have to be talking on it. If you are using a handheld phone while you're driving, it's illegal. Full stop.
Yep.
All they're doing with this legislation update is clarifying what you can and can't do. Now, I would have thought that the existing legislation was sufficient, but what they've decided to do is just to avoid any ambiguity, they're going to clarify it. Now, if you have a GPS function in your phone or your iPhone or whatever, or if you have...
Which everyone does in the new ones.
Which everyone does, and you're holding it in your hand and you're driving, it's illegal. It's covered by the current legislation, but there's people that are saying, oh, I wasn't talking on
the phone.
I wasn't
using it as a phone.
There's nothing in the legislation that says talking. It says use. It's a dictionary definition of the word use. What they're going to do with the new legislation is just spell it out in black and white for people. If you want to be using a phone, it's going to have to be in a manufactured car kit or cradle and you're not holding it. If you're wanting to use a GPS function or any sort of function, you're not allowed to hold it in your hand. They're also going to modify a rule in there in regards to GPS, which says there's currently an ambiguity, I suppose, whereby in theory you could be holding a GPS receiver in your hand, standalone GPS receiver, not a mobile phone, and there's no law against that.
But
they're going to update that so it says if it's a GPS receiver, you're not allowed to hold it in your hand. It must be secured with the manufacturer's mount or cradle or a third-party cradle or something. Mm-hmm. So all this hype that's been in Fairfax Digital Publications about, oh, look, iPhone apps are going to die and it's going to be the end of GPS as we know it. GPS is going to be outlawed. Nonsense. Absolute rubbish. Don't stress. The worst that's going to happen is you're going to have to buy a $9.95 bracket carrier from Kmart and stick it in your car.
Excellent.
Rant off. There we go.
Okay, good.
That's all I have to say about
that. Glad we cleared that up. Trouble. Their cars have got built-in GPSs. And
if you've got built-in GPSs, then you're lucky. That's great. If you've got built-in mobile phone, you know, Bluetooth-type stuff, that's great as well.
What's the deal with a suction cup thingy? I think that might be just our state only, because you're not allowed to have things that fly around your car now.
No, that's fine. Suction cup things are fine, as long as you're not holding the thing in your hand.
As long as it doesn't obscure your view of the road.
Exactly. It's absolutely fine.
A bit like those video things. They obscure the view of the driver behind you of the road. Bit like billboards. But anyway, that's another story,
That's a different topic for another day.
All right. It's that time of the day where we are going to...
sit on the couch.
Announce a winner. A winner of a particular competition that Dr. Ron sprung on me about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
That's right. So guess what? We're giving one of these away, Andrew. Yeah. And you said, oh, really?
Okay. Well, here we go. Let's get out the fanfare.
I have with me my trusty assistant, Georgie. Say hello, Georgie.
Hi.
You should say hello, Georgie.
Now, Georgie, can you get one of those knives that's just sitting on the table there and throw it on the dartboard behind you? And the one that Dr. On brought in with all the big names on it and all that sort of stuff. I'm sure you can do that. Good girl.
Dad, there's no dartboard.
Hang on. Just turn around and do a throw for me, will you? Just big throw.
One, two, three. Boing.
Okay, good. That worked. There it goes. Sorry, I was on delay.
that was a long way to that dartboard, wasn't it?
It was a good throw, though.
It was a long it was a long throw, wasn't
a
it?
A big
well
shot
done.
There by Georgie. Well done. Now, in third place for the Wacom tablet giveaway, Gordon says...
You mean Wacom, don't you?
I do mean Wacom. Can you read this, Georgie?
In the microphone, Georgie, which radio?
I love bamboo.
You can do it. Environmentally?
Environmentally.
Friendly?
Friendly. Very
flexible?
Flexible. And just like the
Wacom
bamboo, you can do so much with it.
All right, so that was Gordon in third place. He loves bamboo. Environmentally friendly bamboo, says Gordon. Very flexible. Just like Wacom bamboo, you can do so much with it. Thanks for that entry, Gordon. So that's a third place. Now we've got our runner-up tonight in second place. Nora says...
I love Tech Toys by my...
My husband?
Husband wouldn't let me have... A watch
A Wacom.
Wacom.
That's we don't know how to say it either.
It's not a real word. We don't know how to say it either.
No. Wacom, Wacom. You're doing well.
So Nora says, I love tech toys, but my husband won't let me have a Wacom. What's going on, Nora? Why won't your husband let you have one?
It's only pen, for goodness sake. By the way, I found another use, before you dated the first one, I found another use of the Wacom tablets and the pen that comes with them. Do you know they work really well on Nintendo DSs?
Yeah, the pens would, yeah.
They do, they work. Because I was, one of my other ones lost a pen on the weekend and I just happened to have my Wacom. Is that how you say it?
Wacom, I'm going with Wacom.
Wacom, going with Wacom tonight in my hand, and that's what happened. It worked beautifully on the Nintendo DS.
First place tonight, the winner of our Wacom tablets giveaway on Tech Talk Radio. The winning entry, I'm sick of using a dodgy mouse for my graphics work, and the only known cure is a really good tablet as prescribed by Dr. Ron. Congratulations too. Can you read the name there for me, please, Georgie?
Annie Blue.
Well done. Andy Bloom. Congratulations, Andy. You're our winner.
Well done, Andy. Congratulations. You're going to get your Wacom somehow. Yeah, everyone's clapping here in the studio. Well done.
Thanks, Georgie. You've done a terrific job. Thank you for helping me with the Wacom tablet giveaway prize announcement.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Georgie. Good on you. Congratulations, Andy. And we'll be in touch with you and we'll get that to you as soon as we can.
Thank you very much to Wacom for giving us one to give away.
I can't get used to Wacom.
No,
it's not right. It's strange, isn't it?
Someone needs to tell them it's Wacom.
Absolutely. But they are terrific little devices, and I'm not saying that because they are, because we've got lots of them at the office and they work really well. Anyway, Adam Turner, our resident guru of Wacom, is going to have a look in the View from the Couch this week, and it caught up with the new devices coming out from Wacom.
Okay, this week we've taken the View from the Couch on the road again. I'm here at a Wacom press event talking to Wacom Australia Managing Director David Spencer. David, welcome to Tech Talk Radio.
Thanks very much, Adam. Pleasure to be here.
So can you tell me why we're here today?
We're launching the second generation bamboo pen tablet technology, which has incorporated an incredible new feature. Essentially, it is now a touch tablet, an opportunity for everybody to integrate touch into their general usage patterns. It's something to emulate the touch experience someone might have from an iPhone or from a MacBook, that sort of multi-finger gesture control and touch interactivity.
So if you wanted to simplify it, it's almost like you've taken a touchpad off a MacBook, blown it up and let you use all those kinds of gestures but on a Mac or a PC and not just limited to that sort of environment?
Yes, fundamentally that's essentially what we've done. We've done it via the similar sorts of technology with the capacitive touch. We've also added pen interactivity in a number of the models. So our Bamboo product is both pen and touch. And we have a Creative Fun version that is a little bit larger, and it also incorporates both pen and touch. So you're talking about 1,024 levels of pressure sensitivity on the pen-based control, and you've got full multi-finger gesture control on the touch aspect of the tablet technology.
So it's not just an on and off. If I was touching or using a pen, and I can actually press hard or soft and it will come out.
With pen-based control, you've got the ability to change a line. If you were doing something in Photoshop, you can change the thickness of a brush or the opacity of a brush or the colour dynamic of the brush all in one stroke. So great for masking, feathering, spotting, retouching, selecting objects for scrapbooking, digital painting, illustration, things like that. Great representation of brush functionality through that pressure sensitive control. And of course you're dealing with tablet resolutions of 2,500 lines per inch, so you're talking about something that's going to deliver a very refined control and sensitivity. With touch, you've got general touch, and it's not just an Apple or an iPhone style touch gesture control. It's in fact something that is available experience for all of the computer users. So it doesn't matter whether you're using OS X or whether you're using Vista or XP or whether you're buying a new computer with Windows 7 on it. You'll get this same gesture control based interface for old technology as well as the new.
So do you have to be using software that's specifically designed to be compatible with this sort of technology?
Not at all, Adam. You can utilize essentially touch as mouse replacement, working with absolutely everything. So it's really democratizing touch, if you like. It's taking it out to all the masses. The people who don't want to upgrade their experience to get a touch-centric experience in Windows 7, somebody who just wants to add a touch-based navigation and interface control to their existing computer systems, somebody that wants to emulate the touch on a MacBook from a slightly different position. So sometimes when you've got the MacBook a little bit over there and you're using one of their great wireless keyboards, you've got the opportunity to have both your keyboard and your touch interface right where you want them to be out of the road so you can use your great big cinema display.
So it's sort of like the benefits of the notebook and the desktop combined together.
Certainly, yeah, it can be considered that way. And it's a very flexible interface. We have also in this new category almost of products, because it's such a huge shift from just being what's recognised as a traditional tablet to being more like a whole new category of interface solution. We've got in the new Bamboo family, we've got Bamboo Touch, which is a touch-only device, and so it will replace a mouse for somebody who just wants a much, much better, much more human, much more interactive, much more immediate interface with their computer system for navigation, getting around, selecting files, moving stuff, browsing through your images, all of those cool sort of things that you can do with iPhones or gestures on your MacBook now, you can take into any of your computing experience. We also, in the family, have just launched the pen-only product, so it's just for someone who wants to replace navigation aspects with pen-based accuracy and control and a little bit of sketching, drawing, digital art perhaps, and things like that at a basic level. And then we've got the Bamboo Key product, which is both pen and touch and gives the whole user experience. And of course, when you want to get really creative, you've got Bamboo Fun, which is a larger 6x9 type format tablet, great for selecting fine details when you're doing a lot more creative type work.
So you've opened up the APIs as well to third-party developers?
The API has been opened up for our minis, which are little applications. Now, these minis do things like allow you to annotate onto your maps, share ideas and draw into Twitter, to do a whole lot of little things. There's quite a selection to download and work from, but the application interface has been freed up, so lots of developers can now happily develop for a touch-centric work environment.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So if you lose your pen, you've always got your finger. That's not a bad way of being, isn't it, really, on those touchpaddy things?
Mm.
And you can plug it into your Apple and have a tablet that you've always wanted, that Steve's never delivered.
JD?
Well, yeah.
You're not convinced.
I mean, you've always been able to get a tablet for the Mac. It's never been an Apple product. You used to be able to connect your Newton as a tablet.
Yeah, but now you can use your finger, your digits, as you're holding it up in
the air. You can use your iPhone as your tablet if you wish to.
Can you? Mm. Can you wirelessly connect back into it?
Bluetooth and whatever. I haven't actually tried it, but there are applications to let you
do. So you can actually draw on your iPhone and it becomes like a tablet base.
Yeah, you can do that.
See, links that some Apple users go to, really, isn't it, to actually get what they want?
And the, you know, the remote control on the iPhone to play with your Apple TV, or to control your Mac Mini if you're using it as your set-top box.
Yeah.
You can do all that sort of fun stuff.
That'd be cool. You could sit there and use it. So it's just has a remote control desktop on it, and you can change your channels and volume up and down and all of that good stuff.
But the nice thing about the Wacom, particularly in that little segment there, was about being able to adjust the control of the pen or the brush with the stylus you're using.
Well, that's one of the good things about using Photoshop. If you've ever had to draw anything on a computer, you just can't do it with a mouse. Whereas if you at least got a pen, you can actually colour in and draw. And if you press hard, it's like texters. You get a big blodgy, you know, hard texty sort of thing. And if you're nice and light, it becomes a bit like a pencil, nice and fine. And turn upside down, you can use it as a razor too. So, yeah, they're pretty snazzy little things. And they do speed up the process too, I find, when I'm doing editing, when I'm doing sound for the show and all that sort of stuff. I use a tablet to do that. And it's so much faster than a mouse. It's unbelievably so. Anyway, well done to Andy, who's picked up the device for this evening on the competition. So, yeah. All right, in some other interesting news this week before we go to another break, the court slams Bottle Domains lacks security. And do you remember this? About 6 months ago, Bottle Domains got deregistered from being a registrar.
Yeah, because it let customer data
get leaked, I think.
Yeah.
Data which should have been kept secure.
Fairly ordinary when it came to those sort of things. But anyway, a court in this state has chastised Bottle Domains for its extraordinary indifference to the effect of credit card fraud on its victims over attempts to downplay to customers the seriousness of a security breach, obviously what you're talking about.
Mm.
The domain registrar had its accreditation terminated by AUDA in April when it emerged the company did not disclose a 2007 security breach. So they got into trouble for not telling everyone about it and hopefully it'd go away, but alas, it didn't.
Mm.
So anyway, the incident came to light after Bottle Domain suffered a more serious incident last January in which its database was hacked and sold on the internet.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah.
So anyway, were they based over in Perth? Is that right?
No, Victoria Supreme Court. So I suspect it was here.
Oh, maybe not then. Oh, well, I'll shut up.
So they used to be a registrar. I don't know whether they still are. They might still be suspended, but that was a bit of an upshot on all of that.
Mm.
In other news, just jumping back to the National Broadband Network, apparently it's going to alter our stats in the world of internet globally. Australia was expected to gain 5 places in fixed line broadband penetration globally in 2013, with Gartner predicting a 14% rise in the number of households connected in that time. In a report released just today, Gartner said that 55% of Australian households had a fixed broadband connection in the home at the end of last year. That's pretty good. 55%, over half the population in this country, had a fixed home internet service. And that placed Australia 19th in a list of the most wired countries in the world.
What does that mean, a fixed home internet service?
Non-wireless, I would be assuming, so not through mobile broadband.
But would they include dial-up? Because there's still a lot of people using dial-up.
Yeah, the Australian Bureau of Statistics, maybe have a look for this online during the break, but the ABS just recently released the stats for internet connection, and dial-ups was way, way, way down.
Well, that's good to know. That's encouraging.
So I'll try and see if I can find that for you during the break. But yeah, it is interesting, but yeah, 19th in the list. I still reckon Korea and all those countries are obviously well and truly up on top, and the densely populated European countries, where Matthew lives in Denmark. Don't they have some of the best in the world over there?
They do. They do. They're different models, though, the way they do their infrastructure and their network distribution. It's all very different to what they do here. So
yeah, all right. So
they have like the greenfields installations where they say they might have a new housing estate. And they say,
put fibre in instead.
Yeah, everybody, put in $500 on top of your...
Internode are doing that here, though, aren't they?
I think so. I think they started doing that sort of stuff, yeah. And they say, we'll run fibre straight to your home and it'll be network independent and just hooked up to the cloud. And
it's the way to do it. Do.
Yeah, it's good.
Isn't it? All right, Tech Talk Radio, back with more in a moment.
A lot of the Melbourne radio stations actually use MPEG-2 or MP2 compression.
And quite often, though, in the process of doing all the updates, you find the problem and fix it anyway.
Where did you get that sound effects disc from?
6 or 7 minutes later, they said they were having problems with both engines and the aeroplane had become uncontrollable.
Oh, g'day, Bumper Dog. Oh, Bumper Dog.
Oh, Bumper Dog.
I did see this coming in as well, yes.
Abuse goes a long way at the Microsoft phone operator at about this point in time.
Well, the first thing we've got to do is find out what do you want to use your website for.
There's nothing like this on the ABC.
Within that start corridor, you're allowed to turn on your receiver.
They're the people who have been described as technologically savvy.
How can we always seem to start ranting? Oh, everything leads to ranting about Telstra.
Look, don't start me, all right?
On air and on the internet, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's loveliest technology radio show.
From the old to the new. There we go. It was a very early promo in there, and then followed by one of our listener promos.
So that was the first rant you had against Telstra, and you've been going ever since.
Don't start me. There's been a bit of a flashback. This is our 250th show, which is... 5 years down the track. We'll see if we keep going a bit longer again. I have a funny feeling we will. You never know where you might end up seeing us down the track.
This time next year will be 300.
Yeah, it comes around pretty quick, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What is it? 52 weeks in a year, so yeah, a bit later probably. So good news is that Christmas is coming. We'll get a holiday again. Looking forward to it.
More tech gadgets to buy.
Yeah, well, you've got to start thinking about it now, isn't it? It's 3 months away. What are we up to? The end of September? October, November, December. It's only 3 months. So everyone should be out there getting their wish list together a little bit too. But anyway, so yeah, 250 shows, 5 years. What's been the highlight, Dr. Ron? Have you got any one particular chat you've had with someone or any incident or any great bit of tech or something like that?
I used to enjoy doing the little segment that we call taking it to the streets, taking IT to the streets.
We haven't done that for a while,
have
we?
We haven't done it for ages and ages. We just haven't got time, which is really sad.
I know.
And we have a lot of fun. We spend a couple of hours outside, then we spend the next 2 or 3 days full-time just editing and bashing everything together. But it was always a lot of fun. We have to do that again, don't we?
Yeah, I think so. It was very enjoyable.
We've got new technology now for recording that too, on those solid state recorders that you didn't have last time.
We used to use those mini disc things.
We used to use mini disc recorders. Yeah,
with these great little flash cardy things. They're great, aren't they? Graham, what's your highlight been in the last 5 odd years in technology? Obviously, you're still using the IBM notepad over there.
The operating system's changed.
That's right. Windows 7, maybe. I think it's interesting that we now. Instead of when I first started doing the podcast, you used to give me some stuff on CD-ROM, and I'd record some stuff on a mini disc. All these spinning discs, mechanical media stuff, and now we record the show straight onto flash media, and you give me the pre-recorded stuff on a.
Giving our trade secrets away here.
On a thumb drive, no moving parts, no discs. No, a much lower failure rate, much higher transfer rates. Everything's just getting...
Much better for the environment, too.
Yeah, much lower power usage, that's right. So, just this constant improvement in the technology that just sort of goes on at a level, and we all ignore it, but, these small incremental improvements that if you look back over 10 years or 15 years, they make such a huge difference.
JD, from an Apple perspective or even from a personal perspective,
the development of the smartphones, particularly the iPhone in my particular case.
Certainly been revolutionary, hasn't it?
Yeah, I jumped on board the Newton bandwagon when it first came out in the mid-90s.
I remember those.
And, I mean, they were claimed and were marketed.
They were the first pen sort of
device, they were the first PDA. They actually started that particular sector of the industry. But they were always claimed that they were going to be voice and data enabled and wireless and all that. And of course, the first series of models weren't. You can now retrofit them, of course. But then I moved on to the O2 XDA type machine, which was a Windows mobile platform. Great potential. Didn't quite have everything I was looking for the future. And the iPhone's pretty close. It's still missing a few things I'd like it to have, but it's pretty close. And so it's great to see that technology, because it means you can take it with you can use it wherever you are. So your calendar, your phone book, your notepad, all of those things in your pocket, very easy to use, very mobile and portable. And whilst it doesn't replace your desktop machine by any stretch, certainly not for me, it means that I can go roaming about in a mobile workplace and still have access to all of my data, which is what I want.
So where do you think it's going to go? That's what happens in 5 years from a Newton to an iPhone. What do you think we'll have in the next little bit? Is the iPhone here to stay, or is it going to evolve into a different beast?
Well, that's the interesting thing. I mean, Apple are having some discussions, and the forums are talking about the convergence of devices. So the iPod Touch and the iPhone now are becoming a gaming platform, whereas in fact they were originally a multimedia video and music platform. One of the reasons why they've stated they've not put the camera in the iPod Touch is because it's more a gaming platform than a music platform, which is a bit weird. It's starting to converge into other things. Obviously, the camera will have to get better, or the marketplace will react if they don't improve. But I think the move to voice recognition, to some of the other smarts that the Newton had that the iPhone doesn't. So the Newton had some smarts in its operating system where it interpreted the information you put in it. So if you wrote in the notepad that you're having lunch with Elvis, it'll find Elvis out of your calendar, out of your contacts, find the next lunch time. So if it's in the morning, it'd be that day. If it wasn't the morning, it'd pick the next day. And automatically set the calendar up for you with all the information you gave it.
If you were very lucky and everything worked.
And it did. It was actually very good at that sort of stuff. So that technology is missing still, which is a bit of a shame, because that actually made the Newton quite useful. And despite the fact that the handwriting recognition wasn't all that flash, when you got that to work...
And was famously sent up on The Simpsons.
Absolutely. When you got that to work...
Did you hear someone vandalise The Simpsons donut?
Really?
Yeah.
Sorry. When you got that to work, then...
Springfield one. You remember how God... It's completely out of left field. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but you mentioned it. In Springfield in the United States, MGM gave them a big donut in honor of the Simpsons thing, and someone vandalised it during the course of the week. Go on. I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's right. So that sort of technology, voice recognition, so that, now Dr. Ron was talking about the GPS systems in your car, so you can actually interact with these things without having to touch them. On the chat, some people were talking about using voice recognition to write SMSs on the fly so that you didn't have to play with your phone.
That'd be good.
All those sorts of things, I think, is where we need to go. And obviously, we've been talking about it for over a decade, and we're not quite there yet. But I think that's what's coming.
That's the thing. Over the last 5 years, we've been watching convergence, what devices work well in the same box and what devices don't work well in the same box. And it's going to be the same thing over the next 5 years. We're still battling with convergence. We still haven't got the right mix of devices in the same box.
My disappointment has been really video in a television, in a phone communication sense. Like, you touched on it just before there, JD. But you look at cartoons like the Jetsons, you know, and they visualized back then, 20 years ago, 30 years ago when those cartoons were done, video phones, which were basically like looking out the window at one another. Yep. Now, here we are. We've had video on mobile networks now for, I don't know, since 3G's been around at least.
Yet no one uses video calling
and
seriously.
Exactly right. No one uses it. Why is this so?
I would use video calling if the cost of the call was included in my cap, but nobody does that. You pay above and beyond your cap, ridiculous rates for video calls. And unless there's a day or a promotion where a particular carrier, like 3, says, look, you can video call for no cost or for within your cap for this day, like Father's Day or some special event, no one uses it. It's cost prohibitive. That's the only reason I think that it hasn't taken off.
I don't know whether people really want it, though. I think it's one of those things that everybody's foreseen that the technology will be able to do it. As you say, the Jetsons, you know, had it. I think they had a video phone in their car, which might be a bit dodgy. 2001, A Space Odyssey. The guy goes to the moon, moon, and he stops on a space station halfway and makes a video call to his daughter at home. Never happened. Doesn't happen. I don't think people want it. I think people like the privacy of not being seen when they're on the phone.
Well, yeah,
I think that's
evident by the fact that there's been nothing evolved in the touch phone arrangement at home. Mm. You know, the old phone that you have on the wall in the kitchen.
Mm.
You know, the biggest security thing you have in them is a camera pointing out the front door or something like that. But it hasn't evolved in the home environment on a home phone yet, has
that's
it?
That's right, and I don't think people really want phone calls to become that intrusive in their home that people can see what's going on.
On the other hand, you've got Skype, which encourages video calling between, you know, parties.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
people actively use that, especially like Skype to Skype. If people are familiar with that technology, they actively have video conversations. Now, same with like Yahoo Messenger.
And that's why I'm sort of pointing back towards Dr. Ron here, because what you said before about cost prohibitive, I think you might have hit something on the head there, maybe because all the telephone networks have said, oh, well, that's going to use more bandwidth, so therefore we need to charge more for it. Maybe that's their billing mentality. But the bottom line is, yeah, I think you're right. Because people don't consider it to be on par or of equal status to a normal voice call, why would you? If I had the choice of ringing home to speak to Georgie, for example, on a video call as opposed to on the normal telephone, and it was the same price, guess what I'd choose? Be good. You could wave and do all that sort of stuff.
I think people might be a little bit smart about their consumer choice as well. I mean, I know in my workplace we do video conferencing quite a bit now around the state, and that's for professional business, so that we can participate in a meeting as if we were in the room from the other side of the state, and you can read the body language of those people you're talking with and tell if they're nodding off or not, and pick up the pace or the, you know, whatever. Whereas people don't
we've all been in those meetings.
Absolutely. Whereas people don't necessarily want to do that in a private phone call. You don't need to do that in a private phone call.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, there is that great old thing where people send images of themselves and parts of their body and things like that as part of MMSs and things like that. But
and that's taken off incredibly, like sending like MMS messages.
So maybe they do want to do
sending photographs. That's just taken off unbelievably over the last few years.
I think Georgie wanted to say something here. What have you got something on this one, Georgie?
I just wanted to say that I wonder what is going on with like these programs that have scary stuff and there's good stuff.
Oh, you mean on the television?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's another point too. You look at cartoons and stuff like that. We were talking animation-wise recently. Up. Have you guys seen Up?
I went to see it yesterday.
Isn't that just the most amazing?
It
you saw
brilliant.
Up.
But, gee, it's an adult movie.
It is an adult. But I think it's a movie on both levels. What did you think of Up?
I think it was pretty good.
What do you think of the animation? Did you like the colours and the movement in it, or did you like the story?
I just liked how the scary parts got, like, very scary, and I think it's... I think they should put it... They should have another symbol, like PGM, so it has a little bit of M and a little bit of PG.
Okay, so you want to have a bit more...
Of excitement.
But, yeah, look, animation...
Well, consumer information is what that's about. That's, yeah.
It is.
Being aware of what you're getting yourself into.
Mm. But animation, I think Georgie sort of hit it on the head there too. If you look at what's on cartoons in the morning these days, they're a lot different to the old Hanna-Barbera ones.
Oh, aren't they?
We potentially grew up with. They're quite dark. And I must admit, I have a bit of a philosophy on this because I work with young people these days who, that's what they do. They do animation. Anyone who wants to get into television or anything of the feature films, they all do animation. And the type of animations they do are really dark. So I suspect that's why we're seeing a lot of that on kids' television at the moment, because that's just the culture that we have of people doing animation.
There was always a very violent streak through all those old cartoons, though. That poor coyote got blown up every single day.
That's not like the violent stuff that's in today's cartoons, is it, Georgie?
No, and also...
But he survived, of course.
He did. Do you know who the Roadrunner is, just out of curiosity, Georgie?
No.
No, there you go, see?
Never heard of Roadrunner.
No, but she knows who Freddie Flintstone is, don't you? No, you've got to talk.
Scooby-Doo?
This is radio.
Yeah.
And Scooby-Doo?
Yep.
What's your favourite cartoon at the moment?
Harry Potter.
That's not a cartoon, that's a film. See, there you go. See, the kids like the dark side, don't they?
Yeah.
Harry Potter's a bit scary, isn't it?
Aren't you? Not the little people. You know, like this thing called the Night Garden?
The Night Garden. That's a fantastic show.
Really?
No, it's
know
in
about this.
Kids' baby stuff. It's where they have these little trains that don't even go.
Little trains?
Oh.
Yeah. My 4-year-old likes Night Garden.
Oh, there you go.
Because it's all about imagination.
Yeah, it's about imagination, and also that it's because they're rated G films.
Yes.
A lot of people are getting older and older, so, like, you know, some of the teenager kids start watching, like, PG films and stuff?
Yeah.
And the kids want to watch it too, because I've got a friend that teased me. Her name was Mia. Her mum and dad didn't care about what she seed, because she seed, like, rated M films.
Do you know what PG means? Is that the sort of program that you would watch normally?
I normally watch PG.
What about rated M? Is that more for grown-ups, or would you watch something that was rated M?
I will only watch this rated M film called Harry Potter.
You see, Harry Potter, like, it's designed for people your age, but it's also, it can be scary in parts as well.
Yeah, but I don't really get nightmares.
Oh, that's good to hear.
And I just, when I feel like I'm gonna be scary stuff and get nightmares, I think about something else.
Yeah, close your eyes. Yeah,
that's what
you do. I just close my eyes and I say, yes, dream about these other things, like how what's gonna happen to school tomorrow.
That's what you do.
That's what I normally dream of.
All right. There you go. There's a bit of an insight into cartoons. Thank you, Georgie. We're going to talk a little bit about Google now. You use Google, don't you?
I do use Google. In fact, I use Google at school.
Do you?
Yes.
That's good. What do you Google at school?
We make these little Mr. Men's. We write stuff up. We do. We send emails over to Google.
Oh, and, okay.
We, like, say, like, If Google sent me something like...
But Google's a search engine. You use it to search and study things, don't you?
Yeah. We do study things like... what we're studying at the moment is how plants got to born first. Like, that's what we were learning this term. But next term, we're learning about the water restrictions.
Well, that's good, because we have water restrictions here in where we are.
And we're learning...
And you learn about them online, do you?
Yeah.
Excellent.
And I'm a computer monitor.
Are you?
So,
that's why you're here tonight, isn't it?
Yeah.
Keeping in tabs on our computers. Hey, thanks. I just want to talk to Dr. Ron and the guys about this. Did you know that Google launches a new commenting tool, SideWiki? Are you guys familiar with SideWiki?
No.
No, this is one of the other great benefits of this wonderful Juggernaut search engine organisation. It's a tool that allows notes and comments to be posted alongside web pages for others to read.
Really?
Yes, truly.
So you can annotate the Google search results.
That's right. So you get a little thing in your Google bar, and it says Google SideWiki appears as a narrow pop-up browser panel on the left-hand side of websites and displays messages from users about the content of the page.
Now, is this something that's built into the web page itself, sorry, Graham, or is it something that Google adds in as part of their search results?
That's a very good question.
It sounds to me like it's an add-on. It's a separate panel. It's not part of the original web page. It's a panel
that... toolbar, the Google toolbar.
Yeah, that Google adds. So they keep track of the... Google keep track of the comments, but they display it in a panel beside the actual web page itself. So we've seen this a lot with a lot of web pages that have this built into them, where they have a user comment section down the bottom and people make comments on things. And you see that all the time on the web these days.
But what if I don't want someone commenting on my web page?
Too bad. Well, sad.
You don't get a choice because
That's right.
Users aren't forced to display the side panel, but they can if they want to.
I'd like to see some sort of directive in like the robots.txt file, which says if search engines are crawling this, I would like to explicitly allow people to be able to comment on the search results or deny people the ability to
comment.
But
it's only a case of placement, putting it beside it. I mean, you couldn't...
Whether you like it or not, the comments are going to be harvested and they are going to be able to be displayed.
That's right. And it's, you know, there's nothing to stop anybody. I could set up a blog and comment on any page on the internet that I like.
Yeah, but that's different to going to Google.
You're not Google.
It's different to going to Google and saying, I want to find the Magic Night Garden web page,
yeah,
and have someone who has got an ulterior motive putting swear words and other nasty things in the comments section right alongside my commercial site, which is dedicated to children.
Well, if you don't like it, then don't display the sidebar.
But I don't get a choice what the user's at the other end.
That's correct. I know where Jody's coming from. Yeah, that's a valid point, actually. Google said in a blog post that the new service was a way for web users to contribute insights and helpful information next to a web page.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying, but I don't think you can control it. I think it's one of these things that you can't control. You can't control what other people say about you, and all Google are doing is making it easy to put one beside the other.
That's right, and that's the problem with it.
I don't think it'll work, just quietly. I'm with JD on this now that we've spoken about it. I just think that, good idea at the time, boys, but... I just think that it could do Google a lot of detrimental damage unless someone's monitoring or something is monitoring it for you know, exploitation.
I think it's being very precious to say, I've got a web page that I don't want anybody to make comments about.
Graham, what happens
That's
if some
far too precious.
What happens if someone searches for your internet business in Google and one
ads up next to it.
One in 10,000 customers of yours has a bad experience for whatever reason and absolutely flames you in the comments section, and the search results come up with your company name, and then you see the comment there which says, don't use these guys, they're atrocious, go down to the next search result,
but
please ignore.
People can already do that anyway.
But not link directly to a Google search result, they can't. There's no facility in Google or in any search engine for people to annotate the search results.
The result above and the result below could be blogs that are flaming your company.
Well, yeah.
That's okay. I don't have an issue with that, but it's not my site. It's not linked to my site.
It's still not linked to your site. It's just in a separate panel. All they're doing is displaying
it
side by side.
No, it is linked to my site because when you choose my site off Google's page, Google send it along with other content. And given Google's stranglehold, and this is the whole problem with Google's stranglehold on the market, they can do whatever they like.
I still...
So I've had issues where I've put some videos and things on YouTube around some technology things that I thought other people in the industry might be interested in.
Mm.
And all I've got in terms of comments is swear words from people who really don't care about what I've put there. And that's fine. I don't mind if they don't care. They don't have to look.
So what does that say about search these days, just taking it to the next level?
Yeah.
Is search becoming obsolete in a lot of respects? We've got so many things out there to find information, relevant information, such as some of the social networking sites, even directly going to industry-related sites and following links and stuff like that. Is search becoming as less dominant or less more, you know, there is other ways of finding what you want, which is a little bit better? Is Google still providing a reliable search? Are they, you know, are you going directly to what you want?
I think we're a long way from saying that.
Well, what about is search becoming so refined by people trying to stack the odds in favour to them that you type in a search engine or a keyword into a search engine and you just get the top 10 refined results?
Well, Google actively work against people who abuse it in that way. Google work very hard to keep their search results organic and actually reflecting what they intend, so that they try to prevent people from hijacking results just by artificial means.
Mm. Yes, all right. Let's move on just briefly because we're running out of time rapidly at the moment. We've got Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week coming up for our 250th show. In the meanwhile, we had a bit of a dust storm in the eastern side of Australia last week.
Yep, through Red New dust South Wales.
Basically, the tip of New South Wales, sorry, the tip of Victoria, New South Wales border there, all the way from Bega, all the way right up the top. And I think it even headed over towards New Zealand there at some stage. Mm. I think the Kiwis got a bit of it too. Maybe you guys listening to us in the North Island could chip in and let us know. The multimedia traffic apparently soared after the dust storm. And I must admit, I received a few images from some friends who were in Mooloolaba at the time in Queensland.
There were a lot of really good photos going around.
And can I tell you how long it took for those images to get to me?
Yeah, virtually zero time at all, I'm guessing.
No, it took forever to actually get there.
Really?
A bit like Adam getting his taxi on New Year's on
yes.
on the day of the grand final.
Poor Adam.
What happened? He ordered it at 2 o'clock and rang up at 3:30 and told them in so uncertain terms that thanks, but no thanks.
And 5 p.m. the next day it arrived.
Yeah.
It's a bit like Winston the pigeon in South Africa.
This was not unlike what was happening. Well, what I experienced, I could be the one and out there type sort of stuff. But yeah, an MMS from a guy who said, "Oh, send me some pictures." Said, "Oh, I'll do it right now." And by the time he sent it, it came in about 3/4 of an hour later of some great red dust stops.
Oh, okay.
Because
everybody was sending little... Okay. Hmm.
So, anyway, this led to some articles around saying that Sydney's Red Dawn sparked a 50% leap in multimedia traffic as mobile users snapped eerie scenes on their phones and forwarded them to friends.
Mm.
Did the atmospherics change? Was there an impact on the network as well because of the dust?
I don't know. This is more about what people were doing with cameras and data than it was
that.
About.
Yeah. I would doubt that.
Yeah, you watch too many movies.
Yes.
Oh, dear. So, anyway, the Harbour City was covered, obviously, as everyone knows, in that thick orange sort of smoky, dusty haze after gale-force winds carried loose soil from the regions of Central Australia.
Mm.
And everyone just went snap-happy on their mobile phones. So, yeah, anyway, there you go. Telstra said that there was 50% rise in multimedia messages, MMS traffic between 6 and 8:30 a.m. compared to the day before. And also traffic on the photo-sharing site Flickr exploded as well, because that's where else you'd post all those sort of things.
Yep.
Photos of the city uploaded to the site more than tripled between the same time the previous day.
Yeah, that would make sense too, yeah.
So, and I think that happened with our fires in Victoria too. All those big social networking sites got a bit of a workout, didn't they? Now, one more thing before we go. AFACT have got their knickers in a knot over the unlimited ISP plans that have been announced this week. Have you seen
what's up with those?
AAPT of saying you can go for gold between 8 and 8, which is very nice of them.
What, no limits?
No limits, no download limits. I don't know what the catch is or anything like that. So,
wow.
Yeah, so that's all starting off again. And AFACT director is saying, well...
Who are AFACT?
The Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft.
Ah, oh, I see. So they're... complaining that people are going to use this.
Well, what are you going to use your overnight downloads for after you've got your latest edition of Windows 7 and you can just download because you want to download?
Yeah, not telling.
No, exactly.
Lots and lots of service packs.
And AFACT are going to target those people who aren't telling, I think. That's what they've got upset about. So, yeah, something to be wary of. Go AFACT.
AFACT.org.au is the website of the Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft, if you want to have a look at their points of view.
And another interesting thing, cybersex became an addiction in the workplace. Did you know?
Well, what? In the workplace?
Cybersex is growing concern for the Australian workplace, with more people seeking treatment for the addiction than ever before. Oh. This is according to...
It's a medical condition there. This is like the David Duchovny medical condition.
Yeah, this is according to Swinburne University.
You're suddenly diagnosed with when you get caught. Yeah, go on.
Absolutely. 1,300 internet users were surveyed,
yep,
who were regular and frequent online users of those sort of sites. And anyway, they said a fairly large percentage of respondents admitted to taking part in activities outside the comfort of their own home. So obviously people are using too much time at work to do that wolfing, if that's the word for it. So
what was I looking for?
That's the that's
well, we
exactly
know what
that
he was looking for.
Oddspot gadget and website of the week after this.
TikTok television coming to a lounge room near you.
Sounds like a political situation in a dictatorship, really, doesn't it? Everything's fine over here. But
can I answer anything else that you would need to know about technology?
I'm here for
it's
you.
It's a Garmin Forerunner.
Okay.
Really neat little unit.
It's gone from big pond to big quagmire.
Oh, yes. But I saw two policemen try and lasso it with their ties, which was a good thing. But
we've got great heads for radio in here.
They're much more likely to fail than a component which doesn't have moving parts, like a memory module, for example, or a motherboard.
There's not that many applications out there that actually work in 64-bit domain yet.
You're also going to be very limited in a telephone as to the amount of manual control you can have over that image.
Thanks to you, I finally belatedly got onto ADSL, which for me were just four letters and sounded like some sort of painful test you might get at a doctor when you turn 40.
The design basically for about 7 to 8 minutes uptime. And that's about 75% load on the battery.
Should we be asking Linda? We should...
Don't go there, I have to go home.
To run, say, Telstra's IT installation, you had 11 computer operators.
Mm. Right in the thick of technology.
They had some internal political wrangling, didn't they? And they sort of lost the plot there and everything just passed them by.
Most carriers now keep a call record for every telephone call. So they can go back in time and look them up.
Why do you ask?
Oh, just, there might be people out there who got bluejacked by you.
Well, the first advice I'd give you, Andrew, is not to click on those websites asking about impotence and hair loss.
With that personal question, how big is it?
It's one of those nights, isn't it?
It is. You started it.
I think on air and on the internet, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
There's a standard and they all meet that standard.
They lose something like 40% of their capacity at 0 degrees.
There's nothing that can stop you from doing
that. There is
that
nothing
either.
That can stop
Americans you. Have got too much spare time on their hands.
You're very fussy, aren't you?
Whoever seems to think that spam's on the way out, I don't think so.
Most people roll back to Windows 95.
Oh, I wish I had my Tech Talk Radio bookmarks with me.
So Telstra uses that to its advantage to monopolise the directory business.
If anyone can answer this question...
I'd like to see a digital rights management system that's effective.
Oh, I hate the idea of that.
How many times have you sort of wrapped a cord around something, stood up and pulled your head off?
He is required by law to work in the interest of the shareholders, but at the moment, the 51% shareholder is the government.
That's just mean. How would you feel if someone broke up with you in an SMS, honestly?
$8 billion US.
Hair removal? No. Who's this person? No.
Viagra?
No. Extension? No.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. Oh, this thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's gadget of the week.
Out of my hole.
This is a funny gadget. Someone sent it to me today on the emails. I don't think it's real, but it's funny. The new DeWalt nail gun. No. Introducing the newest nail gun. Made by DeWalt, it can drive 16D nails through a 4x2 at 200 metres, shaped like an M16 machine gun. With an 18-volt rechargeable battery, the new nail gun makes construction a breeze. Sit in your lawn chair and build a fence.
No.
Just get the wife to hold the fence timbers in place while you sit back, relax with a cold one.
Suck back a beer.
With an apple on
her
head.
That's very, very wrong.
That's right. When she's got the board in the right place to start firing. With the 100-round magazine,
Don't miss.
You can build the fence with minimum effort and reloading. After a day of fence building, with the new DeWalt Rapid Fire nail gun, the wife will not ask you to fix or build anything ever again.
She might never do anything at all ever again.
We know this is radio, but it's worth Googling the words DeWalt nail gun and having a look at some of the photographs. Yeah, see, there's our gadget of the week, Andrew.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Another Twitter-enabled website, TweetTree. TweetTree.com. This is a website which I think is very clever. It intelligently tracks a user's tweets and at replies, and it keeps them all in context. So what you do
where
is...
Where would we be with our Twitter these days?
After the slash, so after tweettree.com, put the person's username. So, for example, you could put tweettree.com/DrOn, D-O-C-T-A-R-O-N, or you could put tweettree.com/DrOn.
Tech Talk Radio. Now, you don't need a Twitter account to use Tweettree. Just type the username after the trailing slash, and you can see all of that user's recent tweets and their corresponding at replies. It also gives you thumbnails and gives you previews of links that the person's put in their tweets. It's very clever. It's a very simple concept, but I think it's very useful. So thanks to Warlock, who contributed that a few weeks ago. Website of the week, tweettree.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner says, always secure the Twitter account before you announce a deliberately controversial product name. We're of course referring to Vegemite or iSnack 2.0.
Oh.
In a tough lesson for Kraft, the manufacturers of Vegemite, the new breakfast paste recently renamed iSnack.
iSnack
2.0 has had its
stupid name.
Has had its Twitter account hacked. The new name for the Vegemite product will have a short shelf life, marketing experts predict. And little Vegemites online are not happy, decrying it as stupid and cheesy. Even the... Yes, some interesting comments which I can't read on radio. iSnack 2.0 was chosen ahead of 48,000 entries as the winning name suggested by West Australian web designer Dean Robbins. Today, iSnack's recent tweets have included a number of gems such as tested well with sex workers in the form of an energy drink, I mix well with peach vodka, I can be traded in prison, and I am an effective oral contraceptive. Have a look at the Twitter user to follow is iSnack20. iSnack20, and that's the hacked account, which Kraft apparently hasn't caught up with, the fact that it's been hacked.
Good on them.
The rest of the world has.
Well, if time has caught up with us, it's that time of the day. Thank you, everyone, for being with us for 250 of the best. We'll try and hopefully they get better from here on in. Hey, we've had enough practice now, don't you
think? We'll catch you for the 500th ep in another 5 years.
Absolutely. So join us next week, same time, same station, wherever you might happen to be around Australia. Thanks for listening. Come along and contribute, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. We'll see you all next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Expert opinion from Adam Turner and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.